versus the Commonwealth. We're ready when you are.
May it please the court, my name is Rachel Wentworth. I am here through the Chesapeake Public Defender's Office on behalf of Kenneth Joel Simmons. This is my first appearance before your honors and before the Court of Appeals.
We're pleased to have you with us. Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
5 minutes, yes, ma'am.
Your Honor, this is Mr. Edwards Simmons was convicted of one count of possession of burglarious tools in a bench trial here in the city of Chesapeake. At the trial, Your Honor, the evidence was established that this Mr. Simmons was discovered in possession of an exacto knife, small crafting tool that was found up the sleeve as he was being placed under arrest for drug in public and the suspicion of certain larcenies. The facts were also established, Your Honor, that of the number of stolen items that were recovered from Mr. Simmons as well, none of them showed any evidence of having been tampered with in any way, shape, or form. They still had tags attached to them, security sensors, various things that would have been to his benefit to have removed the ability to identify those items. However, evidence established that had not occurred. So what this case comes down to, Your Honor, is whether or not Mr. Simmons possessed this exacto knife with requisite intent required by statute. Certainly, what we don't have a case where there is a presumption as per the statute. If the exacto knife had been found to be something that's of an innately burglarious nature, then there would have been presumption under the code which Mr. Simmons would have been required to rebut. There's no such finding in this case.
But the Commonwealth can prove possession of burglarious tools without the presumption, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct. The legislature has chosen to create a presumption with certain tools, but it is not that there's not necessary that it be an innately burglarious tool in order to be convicted under this statute.
Do the circumstances of the location where this tool was being carried and the circumstances in which the defendant was apprehended, are those fair game in considering whether this was a burglar's tool?
I think it's possible that they could be considered, whether or not it's burglarious in a nature. I still don't think that under these particular circumstances, certainly the circumstances need to be considered, but I don't believe in this particular set of facts they established that the tool was burglarious in nature.
Secreting an exacto knife up the defendant's sleeve, for example, would be an unusual place for somebody who uses an exacto knife in a hobby to carry the knife.
Yeah, you know, it would be unusual, but it's the I think it was actually the Attorney General's office who said there are other reasons why it could be secreted up the sleeve. In cases such as this, which is a circumstantial case, he didn't make any statements or admissions. Like, yeah, I have a knife up my sleeve because I was going to be, I intended to use it.
No, he actually has several stories as to what. Where the knife was, and then why the knife wasn't where he said it was, and that kind of thing, right?
Actually, both times, both in his initial statements to the police officer and his testimony, in both cases, he indicated that he found the knife on the ground. And he did initially forget that he put it up his sleeve as opposed to in his pocket. Obviously, his condition at the time, he was inebriated, that was established by the police officer. So I think his memory of the event is maybe a little fuzzy.
But to say he forgot or that his memory is fuzzy, as the trial court, you have to accept his version of events, correct? And
that's
find him to be credible?
That's correct. And I understand that in this case, the trial court chose not to accept his testimony. And in the absence of that, the trial court has to consider the other circumstances surrounding not just the location of the knife, but everything, all the other circumstances. There have been several other cases where the court has found that a tool that's not innately burglary, such as a lockpick kit or something like that, that's and they've established that the tools were possessed with the intent to commit larceny. A very similar fact pattern would be the case of the Carter case, Your Honor. In Carter, the defendant was discovered in possession of a 12-inch screwdriver, which he had concealed inside his wool coat. On the date he was arrested, he was found, he was seen to walk behind a house, look the back window, and then return to the front, knock on the front door, have some sort of conversation with the individual inside, and then leave. After he was stopped, he gave a couple different explanations as to why he was there, what he was doing. The officers found his possession of the screwdriver to be very suspicious because it was under a heavy wool coat on a 95-degree day. Not something that one normally wears on a 95-degree day. But, Your Honor, the other facts that were established in that case actually established facts in direct contradictions to his explanations. He said, well, I had the screwdriver because I was using it to fix a car. Well, they go to his car, and the car starts right up immediately. He says the individual who was with him at the time, who he left waiting in the tree line, just a hitchhiker, I've never seen him before. Well, the hitchhiker testified, oh, I've known this guy for 3 months. So at every point, there's evidence established at trial which contradicts his version of events. That's different from Simmons because there is no facts as established by the Commonwealth that contradict Mr. Simmons' explanations. So even in the absence of the judge accepting the credibility of Mr. Simmons and his explanation for the knife and why it's there, there's no independent facts, no independent evidence as established by the Commonwealth that would lead the court to be able to establish any other reason. In fact, is that the facts as established by the Commonwealth tend to show the exact opposite of the knife being possessed with the intent to commit larceny.
Isn't it significant that he has stolen items on his person?
I think it's more significant, Your Honor, that the stolen items have not had their tags removed, have not had the security sensor removed.
Wouldn't a reasonable inference be that he hadn't had the opportunity to remove the tags?
Your Honor,
and that he merely forgot to remove the last of the sensor tags? Or
I don't think that's a more reasonable inference, Your Honor. I really don't, because the evidence was that these items were from several different locations. So he'd been to multiple stores, he'd been out for a while, and had ample opportunity not only to have taken the items, but he wasn't found in the same store that the items were taken from. He'd left the store, they'd been concealed in the backpack, he'd been away from the location where the items were taken for some time. He had ample opportunity that if he had wanted to use the knife to remove the tags that his guys wore that had been taken from, he could have done that. With the security sensor, one of those things that sets off the alarm as you're walking out the store, if you've got something that you're going to use to disable that, you do it before you leave the store so that it doesn't alarm the store employees and alert them to the fact that you're stealing something. So I think it's actually more telling and more to Mr. Simmons' benefit as far as this particular charge is concerned, that he's found with stolen items that the knife hasn't been used in.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on top of Judge Decker's question.
Yes.
Even assuming that the inference that Judge Decker proposed to you is not, quote, more reasonable, whether it's more reasonable or less reasonable, is it a reasonable inference that the trial court could have made?
Yes, it's one reasonable inference, Your Honor, but with there being so many reasonable inferences, we need to exclude, every reasonable hypothesis or reasonable theory of innocence, Your Honor, because this is a circumstantial case. So one reasonable inference is maybe yes, that he had it for that purpose. But there are several other reasonable inferences, and because of that, because you can't exclude those other reasonable inferences, you have to, you can't find him guilty because there are other reasonable inferences.
Are those other reasonable inferences conditioned upon the credibility of the defendant?
No, I don't believe that they are. Not given the circumstances that we have here. Those reasonable inferences, I don't believe that they are conditioned.
So with our deferential standard, we're not, with our deferential standard to any facts or reasonable inferences that the trial court could have made, that doesn't bind our hands on this?
Well, I understand that, you know, deference is, great deference is given to the trial court, but, Your Honor, the fact that, Judge Kushner had told him, there are many other reasonable inferences that could have been made, not taking into account Mr. Simmons' testimony. And additionally, I think it was the Attorney General's office said more reasonable inference is that Mr. Simmons had actually stolen the knife and was concealing it to sleep because he had stolen it. Then that's one reasonable inference right there. Other that it's an inference that establishes guilt of something, but not one that establishes guilt of a particular crime for which he has been convicted, for which Your Honors are reviewing his case. And with that, Your Honor, I'm going to reserve the rest of my time.
Very well. Thank you. Ms. Martin?
May it please the Court, Kathleen Martin from the Commonwealth. The evidence here was sufficient to prove that the defendant had this X-Acto knife and that it was a burglarious tool.
Is there any evidence that he did, in fact, use it as a burglarious tool?
No, there's no real specific evidence of that. But, of course, in the Watkins case, the tool doesn't actually have to be used in committing the crime. It's just that you have this tool, and your intent is that you would use it. In Watkins, for example, the defendant was found near the scene with some stolen items. They were in his van, and the evidence there was sufficient to show that even though he hadn't actually used the tools, that he did have these burglary tools.
What evidence is there that he intended to use this as a burglar's tool?
Well, I think you could look at the fact that when he was located, one of the things that he stole was a Bluetooth, a speaker, and some sort of personal massager. And when he was found, he was at this ATM where you can recycle electronics. So a reasonable inference would be that, you know, he's got this knife in his sleeve, which is a strange place to have it, and that he was in the process. He wanted to pull this knife out, and he was going to cut open the packaging so that he could then take these electronic things and put them into this recycle thing, and however that worked, get money back or something. But he hadn't cut the tags off yet, and it may be that he just, as was pointed out, he hadn't gotten around to that yet. That, you know, he has stolen things from different stores. He was found, I think the last place that he sold was probably the penny store because they were the ones that said they thought that he was a suspect, and they took him back to that store. But he may have been thinking that he was going to go to a different part of the mall and then he would cut the tags off, or maybe his knife wasn't as sharp as he thought it was and he wasn't able to get the tags off. I mean, there are a lot of different things that could come into play here. So we have to look at all of the circumstances. I mean, there isn't any specific evidence that when he was stopped or seen, he had the knife in his hand and he was cutting something or he was trying to take off the sensor or something like that. We don't have that. We have the circumstances. And so we look at his intent, which is, you know, state of mind, the fact that he gave these two different stories about how he found this knife, either that he found it on the ground or that it was with all these other little gadgets and he picked it up. So the comment that he probably stole it rather than found it doesn't necessarily mean that he still didn't intend to use it in committing some of these offenses, either right now or maybe he was going to another store and he was intending to use the knife at that point. I mean, the fact that it's in his sleeve is really very telling. If he had just had this knife in his pocket, you know, it might not have been quite so suspicious. But the fact that it's in his sleeve, just where there's really no logical reason, as the court said, for it to be there.
Counsel, if the trial court found that he had the knife in his sleeve for purposes of self-defense or flight during the course of the burglaries, does that take it out of the context of burglarious tools under the law, or is it still a burglarious tool?
Well, I think it might be a stretch to say that it was a burglary tool if the court had actually found that, you know, he had this knife for some other specific purpose, like he self-defense, for example. I mean, you might say, well, he's committed a crime, he wants to make sure he gets away, maybe there is some sort of connection. But if you look at the other cases that have dealt with strange items as burglary tools, which unfortunately were my cases, one was a plastic bag and one was a woman's purse. They weren't burglary tools. We just couldn't make the connection. And so that's what I think that, you know, if there had been some specific finding by the court that he had this knife for some other reason, it would be harder to prove this case. But the court, you know, obviously did not believe his testimony and was entitled then to infer that he had lied to conceal his guilt. And if you look at all of the circumstances, he's in the mall, he's got these stolen items in his backpack, he's got this X-Acto knife in his sleeve, he's given various reasons as to where he got it, and so forth. Certainly the trial court was within its discretion and in finding that the evidence was sufficient to prove the offense. And I want to just make one comment about the Burnett case, because the defendant, I think, at trial was sort of arguing that Burnett said, well, there hadn't been any intent used in the crimes, but the real holding of that case was that the Commonwealth hadn't proved that the defendant actually possessed the tools, because there was another person who admitted that he owned them and so forth. So that was really that case has nothing to do with this situation. And so, as I've said, for all of those reasons, we ask that this be affirmed.
Counsel, I've got one question for you. Is this a wholly circumstantial case?
I would say that it is. We have the stolen items, we have the knife, but it's circumstantial in that we're looking at intent. And so that's state of mind, that's a little more nebulous than if we had like a videotape that showed him doing something with the knife and the stolen knife.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Your Honors. This is a wholly circumstantial case. Ms. Martin is correct when she points out that case law has stated that statute doesn't require an actual use for the tool, the implement, to be convicted under the statute. However, when she references the Watkins case, there was more than just the fact that the appellant was found near the scene of the crime with some burglarious tools, and then found guilty of possession of burglarious tools. First of all, no one in the Watkins case challenged whether or not the tools were burglarious in nature. And I think, therefore, there was the presumption under the statute, which Watkins was not able to rebut. Second of all, in addition to being located near the scene of the crime, along with some items that had been taken in the burglary, there was evidence that was established that the lock into the building that was broken into was forced with a tool similar to one of the ones that was found in Watkins' possession. So while the court goes on to opine that the statute doesn't require use, in Watkins, they had some evidence that the tools or similar tools had been actually used. Your Honor, it is correct. The Burnett case did reach the use or the intent element of the statute because they never got beyond possession. The court did address it in there and stated that mere suspicion is not sufficient to prove intent. I agree that there's suspicious circumstances with in regards to Mr. Simmons when he was found with the knife and where it was located and in the context, but you know, the suspicion is not enough to show intent. And given this particular set of circumstances, particularly, as I've said, the fact that while he possessed stolen items and had opportunity to have used the knife to tamper with the items to make it easier to steal, easier to conceal their identity, where they had come from, Mr. Simmons had not used it. That was established by the Commonwealth's evidence. Additionally, Your Honor, benefit over Ms. Barber having been trial counsel on this case, and the Eco ATM, or which Mr. Simmons was found near, doesn't take personal chargers or Bluetooth speakers. It takes cell phones, tablets, things of that nature, those kinds of electronics just for recycling. So he would not have, you know, no evidence would have established that he had been planning when he got to the ATM to open the packaging and then recycle those items. The Eco ATM doesn't take that kind of material. Therefore, Your Honor, we are asking that, or Your Honors, we are asking that you find there's not sufficient evidence of the intent to commit larceny with this particular X-Acto knife, and therefore reverse and dismiss. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel. That completes the